Hello, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you again as we continue to discover some of the very basic principles of the teachings of the Ascended Masters, why it is what it is, the uniqueness of it, the profound beauty of it, the organization of it. So lovely. Last time we were together, we talked about the blue ray, El Morya's ray, the first ray. And we have been discovering what happens when creative light is refracted for us to understand the intricacies of this creative light. It's beauty, as we've said before, as the beauty of a diamond. There's something about a diamond that even takes light and makes it more fascinating. So we're looking at creative light in all of its facets, or some of its facets. All of its, I don't know that there's any end to the facets. Basically, we've been shown that there are seven rays that God desires us to look at carefully and work with, these seven virtues. And we'll be moving on to the five crystal rays at some point and how they impact the work of the seven rays. The point of today, then, is to take us to the next ray. And also, before I do that, I wanted to share with you that an interesting way these rays work and how they come in order is not an accident. The blue ray is the first ray. Today we'll be talking about the embodying of the second ray by Lord Lanto. And next time we'll be talking about the third ray, embodied by Paul the Venetian. Blue, first. Yellow, second. Pink, third. These are the three virtues, the three colorations of our threefold flame. We'll get back to that threefold flame later in this time together and in the future. Very important teaching regarding that divine spark that lives within us. So, wisdom is the virtue. Its color is yellow. The Ascended Master chosen at this time in history to embody that for planet Earth is Lord Lanto. I was looking up some quotes on wisdom, and three or four that really stood out for me, very brief ones I'd like to share with you, as we attempt to define for ourselves the meaning of this word. It's definitely beyond knowledge. People can have much information, can have photographic memories, can retain so much of what they read and learn, and yet knowledge doesn't get us to the place of this magnificent virtue of wisdom. We can see wisdom even in artistic application of certain skill. Someone can play an instrument, create a painting, and yet we definitely will see a difference in an application of those arts from one person to the other. There's something that infires that art form, that musical rendition, that sculpture, with beyond the mechanistic skill of having learned how to do it and perform it. To me, that is an aspect of wisdom. We also call wisdom common sense. An interesting, what do they call it, malapropism? Common sense. Ooh, common sense isn't so common. We've heard many people say, I've said it. It is insight. Wisdom is insight. Here's what Henry David Thoreau says about wisdom. It is a characteristic of wisdom not to do desperate things. So when we find ourselves panicking, we know that we have stepped out of wisdom into something else, which we'd better step back into wisdom real fast to get things solved. And Socrates says, the Delphic Oracle said I was the wisest of all the Greeks. It is because that I alone, of all the Greeks, know that I know nothing. That one's really cool. another philosopher, Sophocles, he said, "Much wisdom often goes with fewest words." Yeah. And then the philosopher Seneca, "Wisdom teaches us to do as well as talk, and to make our words and actions all of a color." That one is so cool to me. We're talking about the color of virtues and how the masters equate virtue with color. I want you to take a moment, I desire you to take a moment, to think about the wisest person you know in physical embodiment. Just kind of close your eyes. I'll stop talking for a while and be wise. And I desire you to go to that person in your mind's eye. What is it about that person's actions, how that person speaks, that makes you define him or her as very wise? Let's see how your wise person compares to mine. The person I chose was my father. For me, he was wise because he was loving. He was an excellent listener. To give you an example of his ability to listen, we would often spend time on a summer evening sitting on our back stoop of our little bungalow, looking up at the stars, and I would ask my dad question upon question. Usually it was about God, aspects of our own faith that didn't quite gel with me. And I noticed he didn't give me long answers. He definitely didn't criticize my questions. And I so appreciated that his responses were terse and loving. Often his answers would be, "God will take care of that," or, "I don't know the answer to that, honey. Don't worry, Jesus will take care of it. God will take care of it." I thought he was wise because he knew that to cultivate a relationship with me, he required spending time with me. Well, like many families growing up, both my mom and dad worked, and the evenings were the time when we get together, and we certainly spent dinner together and time after that. And what I thought was so interesting about my dad was he would come outside on, again, summer nights when the daylight was longer, and I'd be playing with the kids in the neighborhood, and he'd come and be with us for a little while. It meant so much. He'd play silly games with us. He used to do magic tricks, and he would teach us how to do it. The kids in the neighborhood thought he was so cool. And, of course, I definitely agreed with that. So he was wise because he knew how to cultivate relationships. He was mostly harmonious. I didn't see him lose his temper many times. He walked his faith, absolutely, definitely. I lived with him, and I saw him every day. And what he was on Sunday, he was on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every day. So he definitely taught by example, as the philosophers were saying, not just words. I was very blessed to have Daniel Silva as my father. And so the masters give us examples. Not everyone comes into a certain embodiment with a father and a mother that they can see, outpicture the qualities of our Father, Mother in heaven. So the masters have taken care of that. Truly, if we strive to have relationships with them, we can have all the fathers and mothers, sisters and brothers that we require in our heart all the time. And today, one brother I desire to share with you is Lord Lanto. He is the ascended master on the second ray of wisdom, and the vibration is a golden yellow. It equates with our crown chakra and even a day of the week, which I had mentioned before, Sunday. El Morya's is Tuesday. His retreat, as all ascended masters have, is congruent with the Grand Teton Mountains in Wyoming, and it's called the Royal Teton Retreat. He is the embodiment of wisdom. He desires to teach us in the West the wisdom of the East, and to see how they can come together for us, both Western understanding of spirituality as well as Eastern understanding. He is the sponsor of educational systems and institutions that are open to the education of the heart. And he works to get institutions to that place. And he'll work with students, those who love learning, to balance them, to help them to understand what we were just talking about, that it isn't just accumulation of knowledge that gets us where we are required to go. We don't have too many embodiments of Lord Lanto, and he seems to be a man of few words himself, in that in comparison to the many heart streams, the messages that we've received from ascended masters, his are on a fewer. What we do know was that he was a high priest in the temple of the Divine Mother in Lemuria, the lost continent that was where the Pacific Ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, it sank. Or different things happened to it. Part of it did go under the ocean. And he also had many embodiments, as many of us did during the Atlantean civilization. One of the things we know about him also is that he was the one chosen to carry the flame of precipitation to the current retreat, the Royal Teton Retreat, which is his. So even during his Atlantean embodiments, he was already very advanced and trusted by the Great White Brotherhood to do this work. One of the major embodiments we know about is his as the Duke of Chow. C-H-O-W is one of the spellings of that. Many of his embodiments were in the East, were in China. It was around the 12th century BC when he came into this embodiment. He never was an emperor. However, how things worked out was he had much power. He was in charge of armies, and it was through his time as the Duke that he was able to overthrow one of the most evil empires or dynasties in China, and that was the Shang Dynasty, S-H-A-N-G, with his brother. When he came into power, he was transformational. His desire was to see China rise and become a new age, a golden age civilization, as his soul remembered from his many past lives. He was truly a servant leader. He was humble, desired nothing for himself, not to accumulate wealth or power. He inspired Confucius, who was born several hundred years later, around 500 BC. And some people say that in spirit, the Duke of Chow would visit Confucius to help him along the way. Some of the great accomplishments of the Duke of Chow were the reinstatement of the noble culture of former Golden Age eras, as I mentioned, the writing of important commentary and revelation regarding the I Ching that had been around even before the Duke of Chow, and it was a treatise on divination, of a philosophy of living, especially the understanding that the only constant is change. So one of its other titles was A Classic of Changes. And later on, Confucius also added commentary to this great treatise of the Chinese people. The Duke of Chao created a new form of classical oriental music. Some people feel he was responsible for compiling the first organized chronicle on medicinal practices. He assisted in the development of the calendar and forms of martial arts that brought health and an understanding of the noblest path of self-defense. So he was really a Renaissance man, as we have seen in the lives of many other of our ascended masters. One of the most exciting things about Lord Lanto was his tremendous devotion to God. Even though now he is personifying the ray of wisdom, wisdom is a combination of knowledge and love. And Lord Lanto had such devotion in his heart. I have to explain that this devotion is related to his love for one other representative of who God is, and that is Sanat Kumara. This was such a new name and a panoply of new names when I came into the teachings, and yet this specific name for me did resonate with my soul. Sanat Kumara, S-A-N-A-T. K, and a second name, K-U-M-A-R-A. What we've learned about Sanat Kumara, who was talked about in the Bible as the Ancient of Days, is that at a time in Earth's history when we were so far away from God's plan for this planet and those of us ensouling on it that we were about to be destroyed, Sanat Kumara made a plea to the councils of heaven and said that he would represent the earth. He would help the earth with others from his domain, which was a spiritual Venus. As we have our own spiritual body, every planet has its spiritual body. And that's where he resides today and resided then, with a beautiful, loving kingdom. And the councils of heaven agreed. Sanat Kumara came to the atmosphere of Earth. He never embodied himself, but many of us who came with him, yes, us, maybe you also, came on a rescue mission. And what happens when we embody is we never know what's going to happen as we descend into a denser form. Many of us started making karma instead of saving. Those who got it faster were individuals who came, souls who came, now beings, like Jesus the Christ, Confucius, Lord Maitreya, Gautama Buddha, many great lights who have created spiritual practices and paths and philosophies that many follow today. They came with many others of us. We're still here. And we're drawn to the teachings for the very fact that our soul remembers that our first desire was to come to help. So Lord Lanto had this soul remembrance. His love for Sanat Kumara was so great in his devotion that his divine spark, his threefold flame, just grew immensely, and it was so intense that in his last embodiment, his disciples could see the glow in the physical. This is such a wonderful example of the fact that there's no limit to what any son, daughter of God can outpicture in his embodiment. Each of us is unique. We are not cookie cutter saints, Christ, Buddhas in the becoming. Each of us does this in our own unique way because we have the gift of free will, as we talked about last time. If you have never heard of the divine spark or the threefold flame terminology for it, you can see a picture of it on the Buddha nature chart. And earlier, if you were with us in the broadcast, It was beautifully depicted in a painting of Jesus, the ascended Jesus. You'll find it in the lower figure of the chart, superimposed over the heart. And this divine spark is what Lanto spent so much time fanning by his devotion and his love. Love, wisdom, and power in those. One thing about the threefold flame is that when we bring it into balance, when we intensify it, when it is enlarged so that it can encompass our entire form, and it's meant to, then something happens to it. It morphs into what we call the resurrection spiral. And this is preparing us for our ascension. And I believe it's part of our transfiguration experience, as Jesus had that transfiguration experience before his actual resurrection. Then it transforms again as we are more intense in our oneness and our desire for oneness with God into the ascension rings and coils. I remember early on in my path with the Ascended Masters that I was shown a picture of a woman, still an embodiment, who was truly a saint. She had been praying for many years. She was involved in a spiritual community. And she was now ready to make her transition. And in this picture of her, taken even a year ago, or it wasn't recent, there was already the ascension coil. You could see it in the picture. So where she was headed was no question to anyone who knew her and understood what was happening to her divine spark that was now ready to be her rocket ship to heaven. Such a beautiful teaching that I'd never heard anywhere else. One of the things also that this reminds me of is the beautiful story in the New Testament of the disciples and the time they spent with Jesus, two of them especially. Do you remember the story of the two disciples on the road to Emmaus? And then all of a sudden, with them was a third individual, and they started talking with him. They did not recognize who he was as the resurrected Jesus. And they invited him to have dinner with him. They sat and ate together, and then he left. They looked at each other, the two disciples, and said, "Did our hearts not burn within us as we spoke with him?" And I believe it was at that time that Jesus revealed to them in their souls that they were truly communing again with their master. I think of Boyd Batten, too, and I think of the burning and the warmth that sometimes we can feel in our hearts as we are in devotion. I think it intensifies, I know it does, as we become closer and closer to our God presence and oneness. And Boyd's heart, he shares with us, often burns almost instantaneously as he connects with his presence. I feel myself a warmth in my heart. I felt it when I was viewing earlier this circle of appreciation and seeing my heart friends and their manifesting their love for one another. We don't know how the light will affect us. Two other experiences that I want to share that stay in my memory were kind of comical and interesting. One young man who would begin to pray and give decrees, our worded, rhymed prayers, when he first came into the teachings of the Ascended Masters, had this intense burning experience to the point where he thought he was having a heart attack. He would tell me after a decree session, he'd have to go lie down. Over a time, this kind of burning lessened, and I believe that was just a burning away of much accumulation around his heart chakra, as opposed to what the devotees feel as they are feeling their oneness with God. It was very interesting, though, and he laughed as he told the story. And then I had a friend, a young man, who every time he would get into his prayer mode, he'd give his decrees especially, his ears would turn red. I thought that was quite comical, and I witnessed it as well. And the action of light within me is different than most anybody I've ever heard about as well. Maybe we'll talk about that sometime. We're all different. The Ascended Masters are all different. The Lords of the Seven Rays are all different. what is so wonderful about Lord Lanto and our movement of light is that because we have a living messenger, these masters continue to impact our lives, not only in our own beings, but through the messages that come through our living messenger, David. You can go on our HeartStreams database, and you'll find that just by going to teachings and blogs, and in the scroll down menu, find HeartStreams, and click on that, and put in Lord Lanto's name, and read many HeartStreams, not as many as some others, as I was saying before, that he has shared with us since 2005.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you very much for your great presentation. We appreciate it. And also instructing us about our website, which is a good thing to know. We now are going to move to back to El Morya, as you were talking about El Morya last week, to give some prayers to him, as this is a time in our prayer service to do that. So if there's any last word you'd like to say for the last 1 minute we have, that'd be great. And then we'll switch to the prayer portion of our service. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen. And just stay tuned as we talk next week or in a couple of weeks about Paul the Venetian, the great cosmic artist. And thank you so much.